If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl. What should you expect at your age? The answer is a lot, and that's what we're here to explain. The topic for today is hip fractures, spine fractures, and osteoporosis. I'm happy to have with me today two experts on the topic. Dr. Iqbal of Vascular Interventional Associates. Dr. Iqbal, welcome.
Hi.
And please tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became an interventional radiologist.
I went to med school at the University of New York, Brooklyn. It used to be called Downstate Medical. I started out in a surgical training program up at Westchester County Medical Center. In the second year of my general surgery, I met up with the interventional radiologist there. And that really inspired me to look at what I'm doing and where I'm going, because here was this person, and he was able to do most of the things that used to be done with the help of an open operation under the guidance of CAT scan and x-rays. After that, I changed my track, and I went into radiology to become an interventional radiologist.
That's great. Now, give three examples of interventional radiology and what used to be done by a surgeon that's now done by an interventional radiologist.
Sure. I'll give you an example in three different areas. The treatment of things like peripheral arterial disease, basically black edges of arteries, usually by atherosclerotic disease. Used to be that you would require a bypass to treat the disease area of the blood vessel.
Where a surgeon would cut in and go to the vessel and then put a new vessel bypassing the blockage.
Exactly. And that's almost obsolete in most cases. Most cases now, those areas can be opened using small balloons, angioplasty balloons, stents, and even arthrectomy devices. And this is all done under x-ray guidance while the patient is awake.
And they go home that same day, presumably.
Same day, yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, number two.
Number two. That's actually a hot topic nowadays. I don't know if you heard the news about Dr. Rice, Condoleezza Rice, who had her fibroids treated.
These are uterine fibroids. Right,
uterine fibroids, they're very common in women over 35 years of age. About 1 in 3 women have it. They can become symptomatic because of their mass or their location. And the general treatment used to be, after the medications fail, would be to have a hysterectomy. But now, there's this new treatment called uterine artery embolization, where you actually put a small catheter in, just like you would do an angiogram. And then these fibers become small and inactive with time.
That's amazing. And number three.
Number three is something, is the advancement of minimally invasive procedure for treatment of spine fractures. There's a procedure called kyphoplasty. When there's a spine fracture, it is reduced, and then it is stabilized internally with a putty like cement.
And by when you say reduced, what does that mean?
Well, spine fractures which occur in the body of the vertebral body, they're actually a compression type which make the vertebral body almost into a wedge rather than a normal rectangular type form. And what we do is that we try to bring it back to its original shape.
And it's good to have a grounding in internal medicine before you go into radiology. So I went the internal medicine route, and then I got grabbed by another person who inspired me, and therefore I am now a geriatrician, internist geriatrician. So, but I have a love for radiology. And I love doing procedures, the few little procedures that I do. Next, we have Dr. Deborah Bergfeld of Buffalo Spine Sports Institute. Welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very glad you're here. And tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing over at Buffalo Spine Sports.
Well, I attended the University of Buffalo Medical School and then was off to Chicago for my training in physical medicine and rehabilitation. And there's two sort of areas of the specialty in general. One is the rehabilitation part, which often just deals with disability and helping people to function better despite whatever their medical diagnosis is and whatever their particular disability is. And then there's sort of the physical medicine side, which encompasses more non-surgical orthopedic care. So anything from back injuries, hips, knees, we can help you to take care of from a non-surgical standpoint. So as far as pain management and then also rehabilitation.
Yeah, and to function, key to functioning is to relieving pain, and pain certainly is a big focus of your practice, and you do refer to surgeons when that's appropriate.
Exactly.
I'm a success story of your practice. One of your partners, Dr. Mike Geraci, performed an epidural on me, and it helped me with my back pain.
That's terrific.
Well, it's great having you both here. Now, we're talking about hip fractures, spine fractures, and osteoporosis. Very common in older people, cause a lot of problems when they do occur. And we want to talk about what they are, each, who's at risk for them, and how to prevent. When someone says a hip fracture, a lot of people don't really know what that is. You know, there's no bone that's actually the hip. And who wants to give a shot? Why don't we start with you, Debbie? What actually is a hip fracture?
Okay. Well, hip fractures can encompass actually a relatively large group of pathologic processes. So that what makes up the hip is actually it's the top of the long bone of your leg, the femurs, closest to your actually what you think of as the hip. And oftentimes the fracture involves the top of that bone or what we call the femoral head. It can involve inside the capsule of the hip where it sort of fits into the pelvis. It can be on the neck. There's a neck portion to the femur there, or it can involve below that. And there can actually be a pure break of the bone where part of the bone becomes offset or displaced.
What do these look like on an x-ray? And to simplify, basically what you said, Debbie, is that we have the pelvis that is the bone at the base of our torso, I guess you would say. And then the femur, the long bone of the leg, has this round little ball at the end that kind of fits into a socket.
There are different presentations of it, you know, whether if there's a fracture that is non-displaced, meaning that that there's a crack in the bone, but it's not moved away from each other. You can have a fracture and dislocation. It mentioned where the head of the femur is dislocated from the bone socket. If you use plain hip x-rays, you can actually see the break. In patients who are severely osteoporotic, where the bone density is very thin, a lot of times non-displaced fractures are not picked up or missed on plain x-rays. The best test probably is either a bone scan or an MRI.
And those symptoms would most likely be pain and inability to use the joint properly.
Right.
Okay.
Right there.
Right. So if someone has, let's say, had a fall, went for x-rays, has pain in the hip, and nothing shows up, but they continue to have pain on the days and even weeks subsequent to that, there might be a pretty good chance that there's one of these invisible fractures.
Well, you know, there are many reasons to have pain. It could be injury to ligaments, etc. As well, muscle contusion, bone contusion, ligaments, and fracture. And if there is reason to believe that there's a high index of suspicion of a fracture, you know, for example, in an elderly who has osteoporosis, then I think MRI is probably the single best test to do.
Vertebral fracture, spine fracture. Tell us something about spine fractures and when they happen, what symptoms.
They can be caused by multiple mechanisms of injury. For instance, if someone's in a car accident, they could particularly develop a spine fracture somewhere in the entire spinal column, versus it could be something as traumatic as that, versus just something as simple as a cough or a sneeze or bending and twisting. If, again, someone does have poor bone density or diagnosis of osteoporosis.
Now, let's just clear up something. People hear spine fracture and they think paralysis, that mm-hmm. you get paralyzed when your spine is fractured. Just clarify what the difference is and how you know whether you should worry that you're going to be paralyzed versus having a different kind of spine fracture.
Well, here I think that what I was speaking more of that I maybe could have clarified was vertebral compression fractures. So there's, when you talk about the entire spinal column, there's segmental vertebral segments, and they're made up of bodies and then a posterior portion. And this thick part that's in the front of the spine column, a big thick body, can sometimes become compressed and looked as if it's wedged.
It's kind of that thick portion. It's like it's shaped like a big marshmallow, I
exactly.
guess. But hopefully it's not as mushy as a big marshmallow.
Exactly. And sometimes that can look as if someone's smushing the marshmallow from the top and the bottom somewhat. Most are very stable and don't cause nerve damage per se. With some impacts or injuries, you can have a little piece of the bone come backwards into the spinal canal. But again, that's more of a rare occurrence for it to be something that's actually problematic to the nerves. And that would be based on someone's complaints, whether they felt weakness or they felt some sort of loss in their ability to sense things in their legs, for instance, if they felt numb or tingling.
Osteoporosis. In some ways, maybe we should have started with osteoporosis, but now we have a background of these fractures and what happens. So let's start a discussion just a little bit about what is osteoporosis.
Well, osteoporosis is basically thinning of bone. By thinning, I mean that there are bony elements which give structure to bone, and those elements get thin. The causes could include things that we don't even think about, like, for example, smoking. People who are on steroids, people who have, say, thyroid problems, diabetes mellitus. When you hear someone has an osteoporotic fracture, what's the first thing that comes to your mind in terms of location? Generally, you would hear that someone broke their hip. And that's very interesting because I was looking at numbers from a 2002 study. Approximately, there are about 300,000 hip fractures due to osteoporosis in the U.S. a year. And this is from 2002. Guess how many spine fractures are there? 700,000. So spine fractures are actually about 2.5 times more common in osteoporotic patients as compared to hip fracture.
One of the things that we like to focus on, and I have a particular interest in, is the fact that exercise does seem to stimulate bone health, bone density, and also some bone restructuring. So a more active lifestyle, especially bearing weight through the heel of the foot and up through the body, tends to stimulate bone growth, turnover. Things like smoking adversely affects bone health. Caffeine intake, more than 3 cups of coffee a day or caffeinated beverages a day, can actually have a negative effect on bone health.
And alcohol.
Alcohol, exactly, can also have a negative effect. So there are some things we can take an active part in, despite if the things we can't change, there are many things we can try to optimize a situation.
And then there's the sunshine factor. And what about sunshine?
Well, sunshine helps to convert vitamin D in our body to an active form that helps us absorb calcium.
I think we have a phone call, and why don't we take that? Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Self.
Yes.
Thank you very much for this wonderful, informative program. I truly do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
My name is Jean, and I'm actually a young woman of only 57, but I have severe osteoporosis, and I have a question for you.
Yes, go right ahead.
Jean. Is there any test besides a DEXA scan that can identify weak bones that may be in serious danger of a fracture?
Sure.
The numbers that you get from a DEXA scan are just such a general number. So that's my question.
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think a lot of people, my patients and young women like yourself that might be approaching an age of menopause or past menopause where bone density does go down, and you've obviously been diagnosed as having severe osteoporosis, there's a big fear. And I'll turn to my guests.
I really don't know of any other specific enough bone density test, except the bone density scan that we're talking about here.
Okay, Debbie, so there's several things here.
Well, I think I'll just start with what I do know about this, the tests to diagnose osteoporosis. And as we've talked about, the DEXA scan being the most clinically useful, I believe, and as close as we're coming to, say, a gold standard of diagnosis, something that people are using as for the diagnosis of osteoporosis. And generally, what you're given after they do a DEXA scan, and they're looking at different parts of the body, including the hip and the vertebral bodies, sometimes the wrist, there's multiple areas they can look at, but they're trying to give you a score related to a 20-year-old's peak bone density. And so they're considered sort of the standard, that age group with a peak mean bone density. And then you're put somewhere with your bone density results on a scale of that. So normal would be anywhere from what we call standard deviation, so everything kind of gets put on a curve, and a lot of fancy statistics that someone smarter than I am figured out, but if you fall within a standard deviation below that and then or above, you're considered within a normal range. But I do know that there are often people who are misdiagnosed.
A lot of patients don't want to do anything unless they have a number that shows that something bad might happen to them if they don't do something. And you mentioned that about exercise, that exercise is part of getting your bone density to its maximal level. So to answer the caller's question, exercise certainly should not be stopped. Are there any specific exercises that should be avoided in someone who has osteoporosis?
I think the other benefit of exercise can come from preventing falls. So one part would be, specifically to the caller's question, doing things like walking. Again, we talked about weight-bearing exercise, and that would be a good place to start, where if you're just walking whatever your tolerance is on a daily basis and trying to build that up, whether it be 15 minutes to start and then building up to 20 minutes maybe a day, that can be helpful. Important things in that regard are strength training, because falls are often due to decreased balance, and decreased balance is often due to actually decreased strength. Maintaining your spine in as straight or what we call neutral position as possible. So trying not to do things where you're hunched over.
Let's quickly, we only have a few minutes left, let's go through the specifics of treating osteoporosis.
Well, currently the recommendation is once you become perimenopausal, meaning someone who's starting to go through menopause, they usually say about 1,500 milligrams of calcium a day. I always tell people that I think it is best to try and get that through your diet. If we're eating the right kinds of things, milks, cheeses, broccoli, collard greens, green leafy vegetables, I think that it is possible through our diet to get a lot of that calcium naturally. We talked about vitamin D, which you need about 400 to 800 international units is the recommended dose for the proper absorption.
So these are all things that you may or may not be on. I'll try to put up some information, links on the website. Thanks so much. We ran out of time. We could talk for another hour, I'm sure. Thanks so much to Debbie Bergfeld of Buffalo Spine and Sports Institute, who was also a sponsor of the show. Thank you so much for that. And Dr. Iqbal of Vascular Interventional Associates, doing some fantastic things to really go to the root cause of problems and help relieve pain and help people live a happy and healthy life. This is Dr. Rob Stahl, and I'll see you then.
Hey.